Guys, it has been so long since we have done a podcast, so we are super excited. Actually, I'm saying we, it's only me. My husband is in the room with me, though, so I guess that counts. We are going to... We are going to try to do a podcast that we have not done in, probably a year? And we have a little one who just woke up from her nap. What is it, baby? Mama's recording. Yeah? You want some more?
Yes, please. You don't get to hit me. Food and water.
You want food and water? Are you hungry and thirsty? You woke up from your nap ready for snack snack. All right, let Mama go get it real fast, okay?
Yeah, because I was going to sleep.
Yeah.
And so I was good.
You were good, girl. I'm proud of you. Yeah. You want to do a podcast that's just for you?
No, that's too scary for me to watch.
Okay.
Scary for Mommy.
Okay.
All right. You want Mama to do that?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right, for those who have never heard a podcast of ours before, I am the wife of the most amazing husband who actually developed Campfire, and together we have 7 kids, one of which you just heard, and so they range kind of all over the place. We have high school all the way down to 5 months old-ish. And the 5 month old is the one you told me to not eat that in the beginning of this podcast because she was putting a cord in her mouth. And for anyone wondering, no, we never planned on having 7 children. We were we were set at 3, but the Lord had other plans and we are beyond blessed because of it. Yeah, so. My husband is laughing in the background and telling me that I sound like a flight attendant. He says, you sound like a formal flight attendant.
2 exits over the wings. One to the front and one to the rear.
I don't know how to talk on a podcast except for formal, I guess. Like a flight attendant, apparently.
Cushion may be a flotation device.
I wanted to talk about something today that I really think is on the hearts and minds of a lot of homeschool parents, especially with those who have children who are in middle or high school, and you're kind of beginning to think about what your child might want to do after they graduate. You know, right now, they're in our home. You know, they are in the comfort of our homes. We are protecting them from certain things. We are preparing them for other things. But sometimes it can kind of feel overwhelming to know that they are headed toward graduation. I feel like, and maybe this is just me, but I kind of feel like it causes this knot to kind of well up in our stomachs. And for me, I think the knot is a bit of anxiety. It's have I checked all of the boxes, or have I done enough to truly help my daughter or son to prepare them for what's coming next? And full disclosure here, I have always struggled with this thought process a lot because I come from a very intense and very rigorous background. So, you know, just a little background here. Even when I went to school myself, I was your stereotypical, had a GPA even above 4.0 because I was taking AP classes, so it scaled up. And I was still even always asking myself then, have I done enough? I was in all kinds of different clubs and sports and extracurriculars, and I was always asking myself, have I done enough? Is my GPA high enough? You know, it was always this race between me and one other student for valedictorian. And we were always trying to one up the other and always feeling like we weren't good enough, or like we were just falling a little bit behind. And even as a teenager, I was just played with that thought. Am I doing enough? Am I doing good enough? Am I doing enough things on the task list? And, you know, at the end of the day, obviously it all worked out. But still, I feel like that just natural instinctive thought process has still transferred down, and now it weighs on me with my own children, if that makes sense. I think, or I hope, I'm not alone in that though. I know we aren't on social media, but I do get screenshots from other people and I see other parents asking similar questions, so I don't feel so alone. You know, I see other moms sharing those similar feelings. I see the questions of, well, how do I know that insert blank is enough? Or, and you know, they ask that even if they're doing conventional or traditional education, just like I was. They were still questioning. They were still wondering if they have checked enough boxes. And then especially when they want to go, let's say, a unit study approach, I see it even more where parents are out there asking, can I do it? Can I educate my child with a non-traditional or unit study approach and serve them well if they desire to go to college or university or a particular trade or career? I mean, do any of you listening feel that way? I feel like that's just such a thing that really carries weight for us parents, especially when our children start growing and approaching that age. So it got me thinking the other day, and I was really trying to be introspective and pray about it. And I felt like I really wanted to share something with you guys to hopefully be an encouragement to any of you.
Before you do that, let me add something real quick, if you don't mind. I think we as parents have been conditioned to question whether things are enough. I mean, either you're coming
from homeschool.
Yeah. There's really two types of parents out there. There are the parents that were homeschooled, and there are the parents that were not, that were public schooled or private schooled.
I was both.
Right. Some have the glorious experience of getting to do both. I was public schooled. And so if you're public schooled and you go into homeschooling your children, you have your public school experiences to reference. That's what you're referencing. And then you have also the paradigm that homeschool is not enough in general, categorically not enough. And so that makes you feel a little bit panicked because...
I saw the other day, somebody sent me a screenshot of somebody asking, it was something along the lines of, my neighbor says, well, you're homeschooling your child. Will they be able to go to college? Yeah. And you know, that's something that even there's a whole world out there that's unaware of homeschooling. They're unaware that places like Harvard actually seek out homeschoolers. And so they ask these questions, which inherently cause the parent to doubt themselves when in fact they should be doing the opposite. And I just want to give a disclaimer right here that we are in no way supporting Harvard or Yale or Princeton and some of the very ungodly things that are taught there. But we are just using it as a reference that is generally looked at as a more prestigious university or a university that requires a higher level of education. And when these kinds of universities seek out homeschoolers, it is because they are known for thinking outside the box. They are known for having a different kind of education than what you typically get in a public school system, which is a really, really good thing. And it's really positive for homeschoolers. And so that's the only indication that I mean by it. I don't mean to promote or elevate any one particular university. That was just used as an example.
You know, when you're in the military, there's a checklist for everything. You have to go down the checklist. Before pilots take off, they have a checklist that they run through. Before operators would do our thing, we would have a checklist of gear or a checklist of the equipment that we're going to be taking, making sure the weapon systems are functioning. All of these things that we have to run through because at the end of the day, there's a chance that something could be dropped or forgotten or whatever. But quite honestly, towards a certain part of your career, you didn't need the checklist. Right. Like, you could have rewritten the checklist more efficiently because you have gotten to the point where you know what you're doing. You know how you want to tailor this for you. And it's the same way with your homeschool. You don't need a checklist after a while to homeschool. In the beginning, I get it. There's a lot. It feels overwhelming and you want to run a checklist. But keep in mind that you are the litmus paper for that checklist because you are the ones raising your children. You are the ones that understand where you want your children to have opportunities and how you best want to nurture and foster that education.
But you know, even for like me though, even though I know all of that, the older and older our kids get, and as they're getting ready to graduate, I still revert back to that like knot in my stomach that I talked about earlier. And it's just, I don't know, maybe it's a mom thing. But you know, one of the other questions that I've seen come up quite a bit, and this is relevant, is people ask on our page actually. Uh oh, can you hold on, please? I'm so sorry. Thank you. They ask, can my university aspiring student complete high school with a non-traditional style of education? That's actually the one of the questions I see the most. And sorry if you guys are hearing lots of pauses. I'm trying to deal with the baby and do the podcast at the same time. Anyway, I wanted to address that question, that little question of, can my university aspiring student complete high school with a non-traditional style of education or with a unit study approach is the other way that people sometimes word it. And a lot of times the incorrect answer that I see over and over and over again is this. It depends on what your child's aspirations are. And that is an incorrect answer. And you might be wondering, why am I saying that that is an incorrect answer? Because at first glance, it kind of seems right. It depends on what your child's aspirations are. But let me explain. Asking, can I teach my homeschooler or my high schooler with a unit study or a non-traditional approach to education and still have it be enough is tantamount to asking, can my hungry child be made full if I feed him at the living room table instead of the dining room table? If someone came along and answered, well, it depends on how full you want your child to be, that would be an incorrect answer, right? I mean, if you heard someone say that, you might be thinking to yourself, well, that's an odd answer. The question and the answer is effectively leading the person to think the meal will be insufficient or sufficient merely depending on where it is eaten. Instead, anyone who knows anything about hungry kids or food knows that the question that needs to be asked is, what are you feeding your child for dinner? Not where are you having them eat it or how are you having them eat it? So let's just back up and figure out where these questions even came from. Where did they originate? Because obviously they came from somewhere and for a reason. So we're going to figure that out right now. And we're also going to figure out why it led to preconceived ideas that are actually very wrong. First off, what is traditional or conventional education according to most homeschool parents? Quite honestly, it's this very unusual form of education that we have embraced the past many decades, especially in America. It's where the child is taught according to his or her exact grade level, first, second, third, fourth. It's based on a specific textbook or workbook. It is just teacher-led instruction. There is absolutely no or very limited child-led passion or anything like that. These subjects are built upon in learning. So, you know, you have to complete chapter one before moving to chapter two. It's sequential like that. There are quizzes and tests after every single lesson. Memorize, fill in the blank, memorize, fill in the blank, move on. It's also worksheet-based, like nothing else in life, no career, no... You don't prove how to ride a bike or tie a shoe or do a career by filling in the worksheets. That's not normal in higher education. It's not normal in colleges or high school AP classes. It's contrary. It's also not cross-curricular or interdisciplinary, but it's rather very segmented. So instead of, you know, being able to kind of compare what you're learning in science to what you're learning in history, it's just very, very different. There's no cross-curricular or interdisciplinary concepts. And I'll touch more on what all that means later. I don't want to bore you with it now. So I'm just going to jump from this into what I feel like was kind of like this epiphany that I had. I want you to ask yourselves a question. Is college or university teaching, especially in respected universities, are those considered traditional per the modern homeschool definition? And anybody who truly thinks about that, most people, I would say, would answer no. See, in a single university course, you can have a student that is 19 and you can also have one that is 40. So obviously it is not done by age. It's not like first, second, third, fourth grade. You can have a person who's been in college for 5 years, maybe even getting their second degree, or you can have one that just graduated high school. It can be based on more interaction lecture-led with note-taking, not worksheet-based, not fully just here's the instructor, here's the students. You know, obviously, it can be that way sometimes, but a lot of times there's a mix. Subjects and courses can actually go in different order. I mean, obviously, there's prerequisites for courses, but they vary, and their order gets adjusted depending on the desired outcome and the desired major. And you know, the next one is a big one. There are not typically quizzes. There are final exams, but there definitely are not worksheets. So all in all, there's a couple things that are similar, but it is not traditional in the strict way that many homeschoolers use the use the term. Okay, so now keeping that in mind, I want to do something really quickly for you to kind of help make the point. So here are two questions I want you to imagine someone asking with kind of like a fear or a tentative hesitation in their voice. The first one is, well, how do you know that your child will be ready for college if he attends college courses during high school? You know, if that was asked with like this fear, like, well, but how do I know my kid will be ready for college if he's attending college during high school or college courses during high school? That it would sound like an absurd question because inherently it contradicts itself. Like if your child is taking college courses during high school, then of course he's going to be prepared for college when he graduates high school. So now let's switch that over to question two. How do you know your child will be ready if he or she uses non-traditional or non-conventional teaching during high school? And if you wait for it, in just a moment, you're going to realize it's the same question. Now, in fairness, there's like 100 different things that can fall under the umbrella of non-traditional or non-conventional education. And we're going to jump into that and learn so much more about that here in just a moment. But for right now, I want you to kind of hold on to this realization of the way that parents approach things and the way that they put it into a category of either traditional or not traditional, as if that is the answer to their everything, when in reality, it's the answer to nothing. Now, contrary to a traditional education, you have your unit study approach. There are hundreds of different kinds of unit studies out there. Asking what is a unit study approach is kind of like asking what's a Ford like. I mean, there's so many different answers. But for an overview, I will kind of give a summation of the general idea in that it incorporates multiple school subjects revolving around a single subject. It can be interdisciplinary or cross-curricular. Let me just give you an example. So if you did a unit study on, let's say, ancient Egypt, the history is obviously going to be going over ancient Egypt, pharaohs, significant events, things like that. Geography, you might be studying the Nile River and its flooding cycle and how it influenced Egyptian agriculture and their settlement patterns. For science, they'll be exploring the mummification process and how it relates to what we know about human anatomy and chemistry. And then literature and writing, you might be going over myths or stories from ancient Egyptian culture. You might be learning how to write a short story yourself, so on and so forth. It is such a much more natural way to connect concepts and help students to retain the information. And unit studies don't typically have age ranges. So, I mean, they don't have specific ages. They have age ranges. So you don't complete it on grade by grade, like second grade, third grade, fourth grade. But it's more like you'd imagine in a college classroom where you can have varying ages based on the same skill level, or maybe even something like what you'd imagine on Little House on the Prairie, where there's different aged students in the same classroom, but they're doing different levels of work based on their skill or based on their age bracket. With a unit study approach, you have to imagine that you will be doing multiple unit studies throughout the year. The same way if you, for example, had a science textbook in front of you, you wouldn't just read chapter one and chapter two and say, okay, that's it. That's it for the year. You also likewise wouldn't compare the scope and sequence of an entire textbook that had multiple chapters in it with a single unit study. So if you get it in your head, think of a unit study like one or two chapters worth of the textbook. And then you have to do multiple chapters or multiple unit studies to be complete in that topic. We get a lot of people confused about this where they think, oh, if I just do one unit study, you know, that'll be it. And then they compare it to a textbook and they say, oh, well, this isn't even near the same amount of content. And the answer is absolutely, we agree. That would be like if we printed you off chapter one of a science book and you thought that that was all there was to it and you just said, well, my child can't graduate with this, and we agree with you. Even Harvard, Yale, and Princeton highly encourage this kind of teaching. I mean, I'll post the quotes below so you don't have to listen to me read them here, but over and over again, they say most universities strive for interdisciplinary collaboration. We encourage interdisciplinary focus. We encourage cross-curricular. I forgot to add my disclaimer, so I'm going to go ahead and add it right here. Guys, I am not all about just, you know, respected universities and, you know, oh, well, such and such university said this and whatever university said that. That's not my point here. You know, my point sometimes is just that even if you look at the traditionally well-accepted, well-known universities, this is the trajectory. This is the path that they are on. I'm not at all trying to infer that they are better than any other necessarily, or that your child may even be aspiring to go to college or university, or even that they're good. I'm not saying any of that. I am just trying to provide, you know, across the board, this is the way that universities are trending.
And this is, these are the universities that are putting this information out there. So these are the ones that are kind of setting the trend somewhat in a more modern educational approach. And I think there's other universities doing that, but obviously these schools often get a little bit more attention when it comes to broadcasting.
Right. Exactly. They start it and others follow. It's kind of like how fashion trends start in New York and California and then go across the the rest of the country. And it just starts in one place.
Did you say across the galaxy? Is that what you're going to say? Across the galaxy? We are interstellar. We are intergalactical.
I got tongue twisted. I was saying country.
Campfire, the intergalactic curriculum.
Stop it. Okay. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
So, interdisciplinary and cross-curricular is essentially, think of a unit study, okay? When subjects overlap and intertwine and you connect one to the other. As I mentioned a moment ago, interdisciplinary and cross-curricular are slightly, they are different, but they have a lot of overlapping concepts, and it's what you see a lot in our particular unit studies. And this is the approach that universities are taking. So when you stop and think of that as a parent, you kind of have to say, okay, well then why am I so worried? Why am I asking myself if a non-traditional or non-conventional approach to homeschool is enough for my high school student when in fact that's what colleges are doing? That's what universities are doing. That is what is encouraged at a higher level of learning. So why am I asking this question that contradicts itself? And I do it too, you guys. I mean, as I mentioned in the beginning of this, I struggle. I have that knot kind of just well up in my stomach. And I just kind of want to back up and walk us through what's happening with this. So here's what happened. When homeschool first came out, the homeschool curriculum companies out there, you know, we're talking decades ago, they could only really mimic what was already in public school, especially what was familiar to parents in lower grades. The reason for this is because parents can manage that. Most cannot naturally just become a high school teacher for every single subject out there. I mean, that's a lot to put on one person. It would require a person who's able to think outside the box, a single person who's able to provide advanced lessons in every single subject in alternative ways to reach the students on their level. The same person would have to incorporate all these activities and ideas and support discussions and more. And I mean, quite honestly, this is even more than what's put on a single teacher in a high school classroom, because the parent at home is expected to cover all of the school subjects. So as you can see, there's this kind of like, whoa, how do we deal with this? And homeschool curriculum companies didn't expect parents to be good at this, because quite honestly, they weren't good at it either. So the solution ended up being a textbook with fill-in-the-blank worksheets. So this way, parents who didn't feel like they could be natural teachers of every single subject could handle this.
It was basically public school at home is what it was.
Right. And even at that, it was like the lower grade levels. It was easy enough to just, you know, produce by the curriculum makers, easy enough for them. Here's the information. Here's the quizzes and tests. That is that. Check, check, check. And they thought, hey, let's just continue this all the way throughout high school, even though that's not appropriate. So for many of the parents who thought that they weren't good enough to be natural teachers, perhaps for every single subject that was out there, especially once it came to high school, it resulted in kind of nothing more than an extension of elementary school. And unfortunately, this is not at all what higher level education or advanced courses actually look like in the real world. This turned into something that is called traditional or conventional homeschool. This setup basically told parents, read a textbook, teach by grade, fill in the worksheet, answer the quiz or test. And if it provides that, parents are saying, oh, well, that's enough for my student to go to college. So I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty because I don't want to, you know, bore you guys or anything like that. But I do want to talk about something because I feel like, let's just get into the nitty gritty.
You do realize that you you just said, I'm going to take you through the nitty gritty. And then you said, but I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty.
Did I really?
Yeah. That's great. If y'all were paying attention,
see,
you would
that,
notice that there's...
That was a test. I was testing them on if they were following along. Okay. Sorry, guys. All right. So on the other side of that, you've got unit studies, which are the complete opposite. And you have to wonder, okay, well, where do all the questions about unit studies come from? And why does everybody ask if those are enough? There's a valid argument that critics have where they might argue that the quality of education in unit studies in general can vary too much, and that they don't have the standardized curricula of traditional education, which can potentially lead to gaps in knowledge. And it is quite honestly so true amidst all the unit study programs that are out there. Not picking on anyone, but you know, if you go on Etsy or if you go on... Hold on, my microphone fell again. Okay. So if you go on Etsy or if you go, you know, there's tons of unit study programs out there. They have existed for decades. This is nothing new. So if you go to any one of them, they kind of admit that they're not going deep. They are not intending to meet this kind of standardized curricula. A lot of unit studies, their intent, and I think it's a good one, is to kind of skim the surface of to say, you know, oh, hey, you're interested in X, Y, and Z. Let me tell you a little bit about X. Let me tell you a little bit about Y. Let me tell you a little bit about Z. And they kind of lead you through the lessons or the chapters in that way. And I think that's great. I think that's really neat to give a student kind of an overview and get their mind thinking and processing. But I certainly do not think that that should ever be used for a high school student who is preparing to go to a college or university or maybe an intense career path or trade. There are other unit study programs out there that claim to be able to be used as an all-in-one, and that is true, but usually, by their own admission, they are intended for the lower grades. And so then you have Campfire, which is kind of the oddball in the mix, checks all the boxes that you're looking for in traditional or conventional education, and yet we are still a unit study that does not skim the surface. So we came out with a completely different approach than I think of what you see out there a lot of times. To give you an example, because a lot of people don't understand that the content is actually the same, whether you cover it in a textbook setting or whether you cover it in a unit style setup, as long as you go with the right kind of curriculum, because not all unit studies are the same and not all textbooks are the same. Just because they might cover the same umbrella topic does not mean that either one of them goes as deep as the other. But let me go ahead and give you an example, just so you can kind of wrap your mind around, okay, what is she talking about? And I can give you an example based on the way our curriculum does it. Now, our curriculum uses Living Story and Living Book, which is really an immersive way to draw your student in, but it teaches the same educational content. Also, too, I want to let you know that, honestly, the standard textbook style is so much easier to create. It would make our jobs 100 times easier if Campfire was structured this way. So this is one that we've got on our website, and you can read along with it on there on our Living Book link if you want. In fact, I would encourage everyone to just pause this and open up campfirecurriculums.com/livingbook, and it'll take you right to it on the example one, because just hearing me read it is just going to make you want to tune out. But honestly, I think this is actually kind of a good example, because as parents, we often read to our children the curriculum, whether it's textbook or whether it's unit study. So this might kind of give you their perspective, your child's perspective of what it's like to go through this. And I want to also at the same time show parents that it's the same educational content being covered either way, but you can hear the difference in approaches. And so let's go through this. Example one is your textbook style. I'm not going to go on for too long, but I'll read maybe just like a paragraph or just a couple little things first from textbook and then from Campfire so you can compare and contrast. And now you guys will get to experience what it's like to be your child listening to you read. A volcano represents a remarkable geologic formation characterized by an opening or rupture within the Earth's crust. This breach in the crust serves as a conduit for magma, molten rock stored beneath the Earth's surface, to escape into the atmosphere. The phenomenon of magma rising and eventually erupting as lava is a complex interplay of temperature, pressure, and the chemical composition of the Earth's mantle and crust, like a recipe all coming together at once. The Earth's mantle, a thick layer of rock located beneath the crust and above the core, is the primary source of magma. When there is a decrease in the surrounding pressure, the melting point of the rocks is lowered. The reduced pressure allows the rocks to melt, generating magma. The magma rises through the crust until it finds an outlet at the surface, such as a volcano. Volcanoes are not randomly distributed across the Earth's surface, but are instead primarily located along certain regions. The most efficient and active volcanic region is known as the Ring of Fire. This encircles the Pacific Ocean and is home to the largest and most active fault lines in the world. The Ring of Fire is distinguished not only by its size and level of activity, but also by the concentration of volcanoes within this region. It is estimated that approximately 75% of the world's volcanoes are located within the Ring of Fire. Understanding the mechanics of volcanic activity and the coordinations that lead to the and the conditions that lead to the formation of magma and its subsequent eruption as lava provides crucial insights into the dynamic processes that shape our planet. All right, so who's ready for their quiz on what we just read, or who even wants to remember what I just read? Now, just so you guys know, I mean, we type that up. That is so easy to type up. That is your standard textbook traditional approach to education. And if, again, if that's what you like, please stick with it. But here's another example that we also typed up, and it has all of the same exact educational content covered. Looking down from the helicopter, Chris could see lava violently erupting, cascading over the Earth's crust below. He wasn't sure if the warmth against his cheeks was his imagination or if the scorching earth was wafting upwards and literally cinching his nostrils. Moments before, that lava was only something called magma, melting rocks deep beneath the surface. A seemingly innocent mountain, he thought to himself, a facade harboring the dangerous rocks of fire lying under it all this time. The opening in the mountaintop and the cracks in the earth allowed the magma to escape, revealing the volcano they were now witnessing. A short time ago, the pressure of the earth started to decrease, and those rocks started to melt. Chris looked down at the great Pacific Ocean under his dangling feet and saw the lava flowing into the water. He wondered to himself where the lava went or how far down it sank. Now he understood why they called this area the Ring of Fire. He thought he could almost see it from this view up high, what looked like a circle or a ring of volcanoes around the edge of the ocean. The one spewing lava this day was one of them. He'd heard it said that 75% of all volcanoes were here in this ring, and he wondered what they'd look like if they all erupted at once. Suddenly, the helicopter jolted, bringing him back to the moment. Something caught in the blades, and the pilot lost. You know, it has dot, 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 because the story continues later. And then it says, students, pause for a deeper look. The creation of magma is quite a story. It begins deep within the earth, where rocks sit under such intense pressure that they stay solid, even in spite of their fiery temperatures. But when this pressure drops, perhaps because of the movement of tectonic plates, these same rocks suddenly find themselves able to melt, turning into molten magma that begins pushing its way up to give you a spectacular, though somewhat terrifying, show. Volcanoes aren't just random features. They're most often found around the planet's tectonic plate boundaries. These plates are giant slabs of the Earth's crust that float on the semi-fluid layer underneath. And when these plates move, they can either pull apart, crash together, or grind past one another. And you should know that any of these actions can create the perfect conditions for volcanoes to form. Oh, and that Ring of Fire that was mentioned, it's an arc that encircles the Pacific Ocean. It is not just a circus act. It is the place to be for volcanic and earthquake zones. So imagine a giant horseshoe made up of about 75% of the world's active and dormant volcanoes, and you will have the Ring of Fire. It's where the Pacific plate meets many surrounding tectonic plates, and it creates a continuous dance of serious geological drama. And that's the end of the reading. All right, so if you guys compare those two, again, you can back it up, rewind if you want to. We wrote both of those, same exact educational content. One we wrote for a textbook, the other we wrote for Campfire. And it's easy to see at first glance how parents might not understand that the second one is actually more rigorous and contains more content and a more immersive style of learning that students can actually retain and understand. They, for some reason, parents automatically want to default to this, oh, but it sounds textbooky, so it must be more rigorous or it must include more, when in reality it doesn't. So I want to be clear that you cannot tell what your child is actually being taught based on unit study or non-unit study alone. There's all kinds of unit studies out there that go to different depths in what they teach. And it's important that you distinguish those and not just ask a blanket question. That's the wrong question to be asked.
It's not just that we are preparing them for college. Now, with these colleges stepping away from the classical education model, I think that is more of an effort to transition into real life. And that's the whole concept with Campfire. We are trying to educate your children for life and being able to navigate life, to function in life, to be successful in life. Not necessarily talking monetarily, but just in a way of accomplishing what they want to accomplish, learning how to step-by-step progress through life, knowing how to handle whatever circumstances come up.
Right, yeah. Parents are asking the wrong question. What they need to be asking is, what is the meat? What is included inside this unit study? Is it a skim the surface, or is it really going deep? Is it really engaging my student so that they can recall and remember and apply it to life? That is what parents need to be asking. And guys, just so no one is confused, we have been specifically addressing school topics like science and math and you know, things like that for children who are wanting to go to college. But I don't want any parent out there to be mistaken that the most important thing we can ever teach our children is about the Lord. And that is why Campfire has Faith Talks. That is why we tie in everything back to the Bible, back to God's Word, and to learn more about Him and come together as a family. And we could do a whole entire podcast on that. And the only reason we haven't been heavily emphasizing it was because this was intended to answer the parents' questions who were specifically asking in relation to college.
Well, if you stop to think about it and you think about how the education that we've been primarily focused on here is addressing preparing our children for whether it's college, a trade career, how to handle life, critical thinking, these types of things, and really that all of that stops short of what is the infinite life with our Lord, our Savior, Jesus, who died on the cross for us. And that should be, at least in our family, and hopefully yours, it should be the foundation of all education. Because what is education? Education is simply just helping us to get on a train ride from one station to the next, when in fact this train is going on forever. Mm-hmm. And teaching our children about the Lord is the most important part of that forever journey.
So as far as the regular scholastic content alone, make sure you're covering everything that needs to be covered for their education, and then make sure that you're teaching it to them in a way that they can actually apply it and retain it. It's not good enough just to do one or the other. So let go of those preconceived ideas of, I have to go with textbook, because a lot of us have tried textbook and we see that our children don't learn from it. Our children don't retain it. They eat it and then they dump it. They study and memorize it for a test and then it's gone from their mind forever. We don't want that for our students. And the only reason some parents choose this way is because they've been told that it's the right way. And that is an incorrect idea that we need to feel free to let go. And I want to be clear that it's not just a textbook itself that I'm referring to, but the approach that goes along with it. And certainly if your student learns best that way, or if they enjoy that approach, stay with that and use what works for them. The difference here that people need to understand is that it's not about asking what's on the outside. It's not about how can you use a non-traditional or non-conventional education with a high school student, or how can you use a unit study for your high school student and have it be enough. Those are the wrong questions. Those are like asking, you know, is dinner going to be enough if we eat it on the couch instead of eating it at the dining room table? You guys, you need to let go of that fear. Let go of those things that have been, you know, kind of hard-pressed into us, and recognize that it's about the meat, it's about the inside. You are nourishing your child. Aside from that, I also want to let you guys know a major, major, major plus that you get from doing Campfire, and that is that we place a strong emphasis on extracurricular and job shadowing or skills shadowing in real life. So this is actually a step above, because we are actually teaching your students how to do these trades, how to do these careers, what is expected according to the professional and the expert that we are interviewing and job shadowing. They know what's required of them because they've been through it in college and university, and in their 20 years of experience, they know, and we are taking that wisdom from them and giving it to you guys. And not only is this beneficial for your student and for your family, but it is beneficial for your transcripts, and it is actually giving them a better perspective of what you're going through. It is encouraging students to go and do job shadowing in real life and be prepared for that and to show what they've already learned at home through Campfire. And that is going to highly, highly, highly prepare them and make them stand out among their peers. Campfire is the only curriculum that we personally know of where the curriculum itself is the teacher. It's not just a dump of information in a textbook. It is the teacher. The parent is actually a student along with their child, though they are usually the one reading out loud or taking turns reading out loud. But the units themselves, they do the cool teacher moments, you know, the discussion questions and the critical thinking prompts and the learning extensions and, you know, kind of the prompts to remind students, don't forget, take a note here, and the moments to pause within the lecture or the reading. Those things that cool teachers would do in real life in a college environment or in an AP class in high school, all of that is written directly into the curriculum in every single subject, all of it. So the parent at home no longer has to be everything. They no longer have to be a jack of all trades. They can truly enjoy learning along with their student, and the curriculum is the instructor. The curriculum is the lecture teaching, or the cool teacher teaching. All you have to do is open and go, and you will become like the real world wonderful teacher that helps concepts to stick and make sense for years to come. So I hope you guys go away knowing that with confidence, there are all kinds of curricula out there nowadays, and you can choose what your family likes. And that's what I hope that you do. But I hope that you guys will look at the meat inside. Is this textbook teaching the information, but is it teaching it in a way that my child will retain it? Is this unit study teaching things in a way that my student will retain it, but perhaps it's not covering all the information? Or is this other approach covering exactly what my student needs for college level education, and they're doing it in a way that will retain it for my particular student and their learning style and what I prefer to teach in? So I hope that was an encouragement to somebody out there. I don't know if it was, but I sincerely hope it was, because I know how much moms struggle with this. So I hope you guys are blessed today by this, and we will talk more later. I hope you guys have a blessed week.